This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
All right, guys, we are back for another episode of the Deep in the Hunt of Texas podcast. As always, this episode is brought to you by Kirko Services, your Gulf Coast transportation hotshot needs. It's a no-go without Kirko. You can reach out to Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S, at Kirko, C-U-R-C-O.com. All right, guys, newsflash. It is hot in the state of Texas, and it's only getting hotter here in DFW. We are going to peak out on Wednesday at 105. Supposedly, the weather people who know a lot more than me say it has something to do with this tropical depression moving in, so I know you folks on the coast are about to get plenty of rain. However, I guess that means it is just going to be, pretty hot for the rest of us here in Texas. So not much to talk on the hunting front as usual. So I haven't officially named this the summer fishing series, but after like 3 fishing podcasts in a row, I think we're informally going to call this the summer fishing series because there is nothing I'd rather do than be on the water. But per usual, we're going to bring in people much more well-educated, eloquent, and just overall around better than me. So we have, of the Skiff Wanderer fame, we have Pete Capel here. Pete, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Doing good. Appreciate you doing this. I know, as always, these are always random Instagram DMs, and usually goes pretty well, and most people are pretty accepting, but I appreciate you giving up an hour here on a Monday night.
Yeah, well, you know, pretty sure nowadays all my friends are from Instagram, so you know, I don't know what it is. Parents told me not to talk to strangers on the internet, and now most of my friends I met on the internet.
You know, that's a really good point. I mean, especially, you know, being not having any kids or anything like that, I feel like I'm making more and more friends on the internet, as like most of my friends are on kid number 3. I see them maybe like once every 2 months. Like one of my college roommate I played golf with on Saturday, and I have not seen him in 9 months. So, that's just life with kids. So I just find other sickos on the internet like myself who just like to hunt and fish. And, turns out it's pretty easy at making friends.
Yeah, normally is. It, you have a common interest in time. Time is the key, well, right?
For sure. And, you know, as much as I like to say I have a bunch of free time, like I was telling you, obviously you are the fly fisherman here. And I was telling before we got on, I am mortified to get into fly fishing. I've done it lightly, never, you know, on inshore fishing, but more like, you know, our family's gone to Branson for years, and Lake Tanicomo is very famous for like brown trout, rainbow trout, and all that fun stuff. And I've done a little bit there, but between golf, hunting, and fishing, I mean, if I start getting into fly fishing, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to sell the house, move into an RV, and just between time and budget wise, I'm a little scared.
I mean, I think, yeah, like we were talking about, I think just about every guy has one of those, two of those three between hunting, fishing, and golf. And one's their go-to. The second one they kind of do, and the third one they know better than to start. And so for me, it's fishing every single day, hunt when I can, and I won't touch a golf club.
For sure. And, you know, one of these days, I don't know, I think my golf club days are slowing down. I got into competitive golf for a while as an adult, and, you know, I played a qualifier a couple weeks ago, and I'm playing with a guy that like played at Alabama, another guy that played at Texas. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I am so far out over my skis here now. I think it's just going to turn into have a couple high noons and slap it around these days. Cause I, you know, I have the inshore bug bad, but let's, you know, I kind of want to get into here. I know we started talking about fly fishing, but you know, kind of give us a little bit of background on yourself, where you're from, how you grew up, and then I kind of want to dig into some more minutiae stuff here.
Yeah. So I grew up in Columbia, South Carolina. Basically, I don't remember a day that I wasn't on the water. Like, we've got family videos of me, like, as a new, not a newborn, but like, you know, that 6 month stage already playing in the lake and swimming and stuff. And then we were the kids in high school that would cut class to go fishing. And that turned into, wanted to keep fishing. So ended up at the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy, where I got to do a lot of fishing. And then I learned how to drive really big boats. And from there, actually, fishing kind of slowed down. I started working. I spent the next 12 years as a merchant marine, working on icebreakers down in Antarctica. And then, I don't know, around 27, 28, realized that living like a rock star, which is what I thought I was doing, wasn't healthy. It wasn't good for a long-term relationship. And that was about the time I met my now wife, and started slowing down. Got back into fishing, and then at the same time, like, got back into photography and filmmaking, which kind of always say my dad put a fishing rod in my hand as a kid and my mom put a camera in the other one. And so, yeah, like late 20s, got back into both of those things. And now I do both of them professionally.
That's a pretty sick way to earn a living. I mean, I wish you wouldn't have said the Antarctica thing, because I could take my hat off and put on the tinfoil hats and we could start talking aliens and ice walls.
None of it's true. All of it's true. Some of it's true.
It's all the same, and you know, everything's not, I guess, you know. That's a good way to put it, all the truth. So when you say the lake, you know, I actually had some cousins that lived in Irmo for a while. Were you on Lake Murray? Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, as a kid, summertimes, a lot of weekends, we would spend Saturday down in Charleston, South Carolina, fishing on the coast. And then instead of, you know, being boring and washing the boat at home, we would take the boat to Lake Murray on Sunday, and we would ski and wakeboard and tube and everything. And then like about 12 o'clock, everybody stopped and we washed the boat and ate lunch and kept going.
That's awesome. Isn't it like, I guess someone was telling me like striper fishing on Lake Murray is like the big thing to do out there.
Yeah. I think my dad took me and some buddies on a charter, but like we never, my dad grew up in, outside of Tampa, Florida, and like my whole family is from Florida, and like they're all saltwater fishermen, and my father'll go catch a bass, but like if you give him a choice, like he wants to fish for saltwater inshore. But actually now it's all I can do to go inshore fishing. All he wants to do is offshore fish now. So we never, growing up, like we never really got into the striper game on Lake Murray. Like we probably could have.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, dude, it's such a great point you make, because like I'm admittedly very new to the inshore game. I had the exact opposite experience of you growing up, where like my dad, hardcore bass fisherman, like sand bass run in the spring was always a big thing. You know, finding trees to crappie fish, like all sorts of like lake stuff. I mean, he was the kind of sicko that would be like, hey, I'm getting off work and I'm coming from Dallas and I'm going to be there at like 6:30 and we're going to, you know, this golf course by the house because somebody told me that there's like big fish in this pond on this par three, and like just sicko stuff. But so I grew up only, you know, lake fishing. And then, like I said, kind of doing the, you know, lake trout thing with the brown trout rainbow in Missouri and Colorado a little bit. But dude, as soon as I did my first like inshore fishing experience, like it was like giving a crack addict drugs. I mean, I was already, I guess you could say I was already in the halfway house of fishing. And then I thought I was getting sober and I was not really doing a whole lot of fishing anymore. And it's like I got out in the street and I saw my old buddy I used to smoke meth with and I was done. But it's, dude, I am obsessed with the inshore fishing right now.
That's one of the things when one of the things I love about guiding is guiding people onto their first redfish on the fly. And typically, like once we get there and we reach that milestone and they catch their first redfish on fly, the first thing I do is I look at them and I say, dude, I'm sorry. And they're like, what? I was like, I just ruined your life. And then you see the wheels turning for a second of like, you just ruined my life. And then they think about it and they're like, oh crap, I'm going to have to do this more. I'm like, yep, you're about to spend a lot of money.
Oh, for sure. And it's funny you say that. I mean, this wasn't fly fishing, and maybe I'm going to regret this entire podcast, because by the end of this, I'm just going to like sit here and start loading my cart up with all sorts of stuff I don't need. But, you know, very similar. I guess about a year ago, first time inshore fishing, went on a charter, and it was October. And we caught our limit of redfish in 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I can get behind this. And then, you know, we went around chasing black drum, and then we went to the channel and started catching oversized for fun. And I'm like, oh no. Like, oh no. And then it's been tough. I mean, any chance I get, and that's the stinky part about living in Fort Worth, is it's not necessarily the most accessible, but any chance I get to go down there, or even, you know, I got some buddies in Galveston as well, I'm like, yeah, golf, all of that, that's all second now. I've even tried to talk people into jetty fishing, and I'm like, I don't care. I mean, I'm down bad for it, but I surmise that if I get on a fly rod here and start sight casting some reds, it could propose a lot of trouble for me.
Yeah, if you or like any of your listeners, which I'm assuming like are into like spot and stock hunting, or even like, you know, bow hunting, see how close I can get to this, to whatever I'm hunting. Like sight casting redfish is gonna be your next addiction, because it's I mean, with the skiff, like, yeah, I mean, you're sitting there, you're trying to figure out, how can I sneak up on this thing? How can I be stealthy? How can I be quiet? How can I, you know, hide the skiff? Like, I really like doing it. I don't do it as much, especially like with clients, but like, I love doing it wade fishing, because wade fishing, a lot of times you're getting in like, you know, ankle deep, shin deep water. So you're seeing backs, you're seeing tails. And then it's like, okay, how do I get the sunlight so I can see him? How do I get the wind so it doesn't mess up my cast? And like, well, there's actually a clip of me doing it. Like, we were on some black drum in a lake, and like, we were using these little tiny grass islands to hide our movement so we could get closer to them. Sounds familiar, right? Dude, if you're into hunting.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you're pretty much hitting the nail on the head here. I mean, I'm very curious about the wade fishing thing. I know, obviously, like, you know, you get into like Baffin and whatnot, and that's kind of like getting in the trout and stuff like that. But everyone I talk to, they say if you really want to like get into the fish and like work an area properly, like you have to get out and start wading.
Yeah, I mean, that's I would agree with that. Redfish a lot of it depends on time of year, but like, I mean, redfish, trout, black drum, like they know the boat's there. If you're ever on a, you know, on a skiff with a guide, like they'll tell you like, hey, like try to step lightly, try not to slam coolers. You know, I've watched fish spook just from saying, hey, and that's enough for them to be like, oh no, I'm not staying here. Like, it's, you know, it's one of those things you can't really see, but you know, you put a, you know, 800, 900 pound skiff into a lake, like that's going to change the displacement in the lake. The fish are going to feel that. Like, they know you're there. They don't know where you're at there, but they know like, hey, something's there. You leave that boat behind and you start walking. Like a lot of times, like, yeah, you can get a lot closer to them. There's these schools of black drum down towards Baffin that I see all the time. And the only way I've ever gotten them to eat is to park the skiff and walk after them. Like we can sit there and have like perfect shots, perfect, like all day long on them. Won't eat a touch of fly. You park the skiff, walk 20 feet away from it. You'll catch every single one you see. So yeah. Yeah. Like it, the other thing too, is like, if you're new to, like, I'll say that, like, if you're new to fly fishing, it's a great way to get it, to get your first redfish or black drum. Cause you know, when you're on the skiff, you're not only is the fish moving now, but like the boat's moving, the wind's changing directions cause the boat's moving. Like there's a lot more factors that come into play. And so like wade fishing kind of allows you to slow everything down and, be a little sneakier.
For sure. So did you like, I mean, did you like graduate into like a skiff and then like fly fishing at some point? Or did like, you know, did you start off with like popping corn shrimp on a bay boat and then move into that as like you got older? Or is this just like something that this is you've always done?
No. Like, I mean, I tell you, like, I can't get my dad to touch a fly rod. So growing up, yeah, like live shrimp, live mullet, like we used to, I mean, it's the coolest. I look forward to the day when I have kids to do the same thing. Like, you know, taking up, if you got kids, like take a 5-year-old, go catch a bunch of bait in the cast net. Like they're good for at least a couple hours. Right. And that used to be my sister and I on the skit on our boat. Like, and that's how we would fish, is we would just, you know, whatever mullet, shrimp, whatever down on the bottom. When I was in high school, we in Columbia, so Shakespeare, their manufacturing plant, I don't know if it's still there, but at the time it was in Columbia, and every spring they would have like a clearance sale. And so we would go and you could get like $120 rods for like $20. So like my dad would just clean house there, and we were there, and they had a Pfluger, like 5-weight bass combo kit. And I looked at my dad, I was like, hey, can I get that? And I had a job at the time. So he looked at me and said, it's your money, dude. Get whatever you want. And so that was the first fly rod I ever owned. And I used to go after school, and fish golf course ponds and with little poppers and catch all the 2-pound bass you could ever dream of catching. And then, when I moved to Texas though, 2019, I knew I was going to get a boat. So like my skiff that I own is the first boat I've ever owned. Cause everyone I knew in South Carolina had one. Right. So the best boat is your friend's boat. And when I first got it, I was doing a little bit of conventional artificial sight casting and then fly rod. And I got to a point where I was like, man, I really want to get good at using a fly rod. And so I just started leaving the spinning rods at home. And it's funny. So that was 2020, 2019. And what's funny is like in the last 3 months, I've conventional fished twice off my boat with like my wife and like buddy. Like today I was out with some kids that had never been on a boat in salt water. It's like, well, I'm not going to throw a fly rod in your hand because they've never even fly fished. So I was like, we'll just go take spinning rods out, you know? And I actually look like, I've had some guys trying to teach me how to bait fish too, because you know, my wife didn't grow up fishing, and like taking somebody that's never fished and being like, hey, we're going to go do the hardest way possible. We're going to go do this activity as hard as possible, even though like you've never even tried it. So I've been like, you know, teaching myself. I've been actually kind of regressing a little bit to just, you know, enjoy being out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, dude, I totally know what you're talking about. I just have that experience on a deer hunting thing where it's like hardcore bow hunter for like the longest time, and to like having to like step back and start like rifle hunting and just kind of like enjoying a little bit more. What would you say is like for me, for example, I'm going to be selfish here. Like what would you say like the biggest difference is going from like spin cast fishing, moving into that like fly fishing game, especially, you know, targeting redfish?
I mean, the thing is like if you're already the progression that I would see is like, you know, you go from bait to art, like wading flats with artificials, right? And then you go from wading flats to you go from like the artificials chest deep trying to catch trout to, hey, I'm gonna go try to go up to the shoreline and try to sight cast some reds. And then you end up like, how do I get a boat that allows me to keep sight casting reds? And then, you know, then the next progression is I want to try to do this with a fly rod, which is a bigger learning curve than it sounds, but you've got a lot of the skill sets. Like, you know how to sight cast fish, you know how to watch fish, you know how to read fish. Cause that's a lot of it, right? Is like being able to look at that redfish and kind of think like, oh, he's going to go left, or, oh, he's going to go right, you know? But the big things, like, especially here in Texas, like if you're like, hey, I want to go catch a redfish on fly, there's going to be wind. There's no two ways around it. There's going to be wind even on a flat, calm day where there's no wind in the morning. At some point, the sea breeze is going to kick up and you're dealing with 15 knots of wind. So like I tell everybody that wants to listen to me, like you need to practice. Like, just like you would, like, you know, gearing up for bow season, I'm sure you're out there shooting, what, 3-4 times a week? You know, same thing with a fly rod. When I was really trying to dial in my cast, I kept a rod by the back door, you know, 10-minute break from working at the house, go outside, cast for a little bit. If you've got a bird dog, you want to run them a little bit, throw a little feather on the end. It's great exercise for them.
So I'm into fly fishing now.
But yeah, I mean, practice, right? You know, I get clients that'll show up and they'll be, oh, I haven't touched a fly rod in 6 months. And it's kind of like, all right, well, I'm going to do everything I can to help you, but I can't put that fly in front of the fish for you. You know, I'm going to summarize it because I can't remember the whole thing. There's a great flip palette quote. And basically, to summarize it, he basically says you can't buy the last 40 feet. And that's fly fishing in a nutshell. Saltwater fly fishing in a nutshell is you can get the best gear, you can get the best guide, you can wait for the best conditions, but like you can't buy that last 40 feet to get that fly in front of a fish. But yeah, so if you're thinking about it, if you're interested in it, like what I tell everybody is, you know, most fly shops have somebody that'll sit there and give you a lesson, and then it's practice on your own. I answer DMs all the time with like tips on how to get better and how to kind of, you know, practice tips and like drills and stuff you can do. If you're in Dallas, I know there's a few guys up there that carp fish, and like if you're somewhere in Texas where there's carp, like Hill Country Redfish right there, you know, it's a great species to practice before you come down to the coast.
That's a good idea. I've never thought about that, because there's no shortage of carp in the lakes up here. Mm-mm. And people are happy for you to catch them and throw them on the bank.
So there you go. That's a good way to practice.
I mean, dude, there's so, I mean, I think that's like the Asian carp. They're like horribly invasive. And you know, there are people who will eat them, and that is not me.
No, I don't need to eat a carp. I've smelled one. Not good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like a thing people will do here on the Trinity River in Dallas is like, I've seen people like pull out gar and clean them. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Like I ran for a little while. I was doing night shark charters over in South Carolina. And my biggest fear was that I was going to have a client that wanted me to keep one. But man, did I have some bullshit answers when that came up. Oh yeah, no, these, not this one. This is, we can't keep these ones. They're in danger. We should have caught. We should have put this one on the boat.
New regulations actually just came out a couple weeks ago, and can't keep this one.
God. Yeah.
So, what would you know? Again, going back to, I'm just going to, this is going to turn into like Connor's sounding board to get into fly fishing. So I apologize to everybody else. But like, what kind of setup would you like recommend for someone who is fairly, you know, has minimal experience versus, you know, I wouldn't say no experience, but, you know, minimal, no experience red fishing or fly fishing for redfish, but wants to kind of, you know, have a setup for that.
Yeah. I'm going to preface this with, I'm a TFO ambassador, so I'm going to drop TFO names.
Plug whoever you want. plug whoever you want.
And I just got, just started being a TFO dealer, so definitely. But anyways, so here's the thing, right, is what I tell everybody is you do not need to spend as much money as you will think you need to spend. The TFO dispatch kit, it's an 8-weight kit. Like, it's going to get you a redfish. The big thing, and this is a mistake that I made, right? So first, my first saltwater fly rod that I ever owned, I bought at a garage sale. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, go find a deal, get a rod. The second saltwater fly rod that I bought was a G Loomis NRX. Was that a $900 rod? I don't know what it is now. It was $900 at the time. And the thing is like, it's a super fast rod. It's like high tech rod. And if you don't know what you don't know. And if you're not practicing and you don't have your cast down, like, you just spent $900 on something you don't know how to use. Right. And actually, like, a lot of those high end, more expensive rods can build bad habits into your cast. So like, that rod's fast enough that if I drop a back cast, it can recover from it. So I actually developed like really bad casting habits that I had to later on, I had buddies point out to me and I had to go in and fix and break. So I tell everybody, like, if you're looking at getting into salt water, like, you know, go to Bass Pro and get the 8-weight setup, go get a, you know, a TFO kit rod, go garage sale, Facebook Marketplace, shopping for an 8-weight rod. The truth is like, you know, you're not going to be able to, like, if you're just picking up a fly rod, you're not going to be able to tell the difference. Like, it took me 5 years of throwing fly rods before I could pick up a rod and tell you, oh, this flex is here, it's this action, this is what it's doing, this is why I like it, this is why I don't like it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And like, not to relate this back to golf, but I feel like I relate everything back to golf at some point. I think golf is golf has been my greatest teacher in my life, especially when it comes to hunting and fishing, because, like, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I'm a pretty good golfer. And, you know, I've played golf long enough. Like, I can tell you the difference between like a top fly. I mean, I could hit 10 different balls at 10 different brands. I can tell you what each brand was. Yeah. You know, if you had me hit a top flight versus like a Pro V1, I mean, it's like night and day difference. But for some guy who's like, no, for you example, not to disparage your golf skills, but we've talked about them. No, you know, it's like, you, I just, it's just
a golf ball.
It's just a golf ball. And it, you know, same thing applies to me with a fly rod. It's like, I'm not going to know the difference here. And so I don't, why spend all the money on something that I can't even, like you said, utilize properly?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, that's the cool thing, right? With like go to your local fly shop and you can like try out a bunch and just realize like, you don't have to even if they're trying to sell you the $1,000 rod, like you don't have to spend the money on it. And then like the next thing, like the one thing where like, this is what, like if you're new into saltwater, right? Like the next big thing you hear in saltwater fly fishing is you've got to have a sealed drag or else you're just going to, your reel's going to blow up on you. Right now, like I've been using, TFL's, what are they? NTX reels for the last 2 years. And I've never had a single issue with them. It's an open drag system. You just rinse them off. You take care of them. Like they're going to be fine. It's a $180 reel. Like it holds the line. Like it's not now. Like if you were like, hey Pete, like I'm putting some gear together. I'm going to go fish for permit in Mexico. Okay. Like, yeah, let's go spend some money and get some good gear. But like, if you're coming down to the coast to fish for redfish a few times a year, like you don't need to break the bank, like save that money to go on more trips. Right. If you're like, hey, like, look, Pete, I want to spend money. It's burning a hole in my pocket. Please let me spend some money. Sunglasses, like hands down, like it's sight fishing. If you can't see the fish, we're in trouble. I keep 4 pairs of sunglasses on my boat, including the ones I'm wearing. I've got sunglasses for super, super bright sunny days. I've got sunglasses for overcast days. I've got sunglasses for cloudy days. I've got sunglasses for rainy day. You know what I mean? Right. Mm-hmm. Get 2 or 3 pairs of sunglasses. And like, especially like if you're going to go with a guide, right? It's one thing if you're like, if you live down here and you can pick and choose your days, but if you're going with a guide and it's overcast that day, but it's still fishable and you don't have sunglasses for it, it's going to be a longer day than the long day it was already going to be. Does that make sense?
So can I dig into that a little bit?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've always just had like, you know, 1 pair of sunglasses. Like what do you look for as far as like, you know, different kinds of sunglasses for different kind of days? Cause this is something that never even crossed my mind.
Yeah. Right. So, so like typically like for, sunny days, I want something that normally like it'd be like a Costa green mirror or like a Smith green mirror. I really like, I've been wearing a lot of Smith lately and just they're super lightweight and they've got, dude, you want to get nerdy about something. So Smith has this photochromatic technology, and they're actually like translucent lenses. So like a cloud comes over, the lenses get brighter. Cloud goes away, the lenses get darker. It's freaking the best thing ever. I've had like complete overcast set in wearing my sunglasses and not even realized it because they just get bright enough. But like sunny, partly cloudy, like first of all, like if you're going to get 2 pairs, right? Partly cloudy. And then a pair of low lights for overcast days. Right. And then with the low lights, like you're typically looking for something with almost a yellowish lens, if that makes sense. And then for partly cloudy days and for partly cloudy days, I really like, I'm trying to find them because I don't, oh, the yellow blue mirror, Smith's yellow blue mirror is like my partly, like those things live on my freak. No, it's not that one. That's the sun. Sorry. Rose blue mirror is my everyday, day in, day out workhorse sunglasses. Like those things live on my face. The yellow blue mirror is my go-to for like overcast sunny conditions. So like, or overcast conditions, not sunny. So like overcast, you want something that's going to cut the glare a little bit, but not darken everything up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes total sense. That's why, like, you know, not to make a hunting reference, but like, that's why I hate hunting overcast days. I just feel like everything can see you, whether it's bird hunting or even deer. There's no shadows. Like it's, it's not fun. It stresses me out for sure. That's wild. I would have never thought, you know, I've just always, you know, I'd keep two pairs of sunglasses just because, okay, you know, I've had one fly off on the boat or, you know, you drop for whatever reason, but I never thought to have it adjust with the light.
Yeah. I know, but it can, like, I've watched plenty of days on the water get absolutely destroyed because especially when you get clients that, are wearing prescription lenses and there's nothing you can do for them.
Yeah.
So especially like if you're listening, you're thinking about getting into saltwater fly fishing and you're wearing prescription sunglasses, like get some prescription lenses that are, you know, I don't know if Smith does prescription. I know Bahio does, and Costa does as well.
Mm-hmm. For that reason, I've always kind of stayed away from the prescription sunglasses because I hate having to switch back and forth. And I'm just always, just put the contacts in. If you can, not if you have some sort of like, I don't know, some people might have some weird restriction, but it's just the swap. I always hated dropping the sunglasses for whatever reason to like look at something. It's like, oh, I'm blind. That's so sick. And then like you're fumbling around for in the dark or just, you know, not the best light under the boat or something. But, let's kind of pivot here. Cause obviously you are the redfish guy. That is kind of what your passion is. I've talked to a lot of people, not a lot, but a few people, on here, then a few people outside of here, just like fishing and whatnot. And you know, South Texas, you know, Laguna Madre, Baffin Bay, it is famous for big trout. I mean, that is probably one of, I think there's some other place in Florida. I can't remember the name of it. That's what it is. But if you want to go catch a 30-inch trout in the United States, it's either there or it is Laguna Madre in South Texas. So what's kind of made you the redfish guy? It's kind of, you know, a little bit against the grain. Is it the fly fishing aspect where it's a little just shallower water for redfish?
Yeah. I mean, that really is, it really is a lot of it is just like, where I predominantly fish. It's actually been cool. Like since, you know, 21, we had the big freeze. They changed the regulations on trout. And like this last year has been the most trout that I've ever seen, like up on the flats doing what trout are supposed to do. Trout are supposed to do. But typically, and I'm not a trout expert at all. There's kind of two factors. One is I'm like too lazy to go not chase redfish and learn how to catch trout. there's a bunch of dudes that are really good at catching trout, big trout and fly. Like Ben Pascal down in Port Mansfield, Andreas Spinetti down there in South Padre. And I know there's some more guys that are probably going to hear this and then I'll get, what the hell, man? That's how we're friends. but like, you know, there's dudes that like, that they just got a dial. I got to mention my buddy Logan Crane. He's definitely going to give me a hard time. He helped me catch my first big trout. I think it was about 25, 26 on fly. He sat there and coached me through it. But like up around like the backside of San Jose, Matagorda, like we just don't see them like you do down. If you get down towards Baffin, 9 Mile, the lower Laguna, like those guys do down there. So redfish is, you know, just they're there. Target them and if a trout swims by, great, but normally I'm not really set up to go catch a trout. Mm-hmm. I'd like to. Some of the film work that I've been doing, I've been hanging out with some guys that conventional fish and catch a lot of really stud trout, and so I've been learning a lot from those guys. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I don't know, a slow day on the flats here in Texas, we'll probably see 20 to 40 redfish. It's hard to just be, you know what? I'm not going to put a fly to those fish.
No, that's fair. I mean, I think that's the coolest thing. And, about like, you know, just like the whole Laguna Madre, it's like one of the most like diverse and just like plentiful ecosystems really in the world, between, you know, the fishing, the waterfowl, even you go a little bit inland with, you know, all the wild exotics going on with the King and the Kennedy. I mean, I know people have seen camels while they're fishing up in Baffin and just like all sorts of wild stuff.
Yeah. It's funny. Like I, you know, we were talking, so I mostly guide out of Aransas Pass in Port Aransas, which is a 40-minute car ride from my house. And you know, there's a part of me that's like, man, why don't you just try to find a house and move closer to the boat ramp you use every day? The reality is where I'm at, it's 40 minutes from those two ramps and it's 40 minutes from Bird Island. And I don't really want to get further away from Bird and access to Baffin. Like most of my buddies, like if we got a day off, you know, that's where I want to go. And they all know that, that if they ask me to go fishing, then I'm going to make them drive to me. I'm not going to Rockport.
No, for sure. Absolutely. Real quick, I do, you know, because this is before my time getting into to inshore fishing. Do you mind talking a little bit about the 21 freeze and kind of how that affected everything and just kind of the die-off that happened there and any kind of lasting effects from that?
I will try. I was actually not in the States when it happened, so I kind of...
Oh.
Yeah, I was on a ship at the time when all that happened. But so really bad freeze in 2021, killed a lot of trout, killed a good number of redfish. So the state put a temporary, I can't remember if they did a full ban or just a temporary reduction in the limit on trout. And it was a 6-month limit, and then at 6 months they had to renew it, so it went to a public hearing, which was kind of crazy. Like it was kind of crazy to me, because like South Carolina fought so long and so hard. I got buddies in Georgia right now fighting redfish limits, trying to get redfish limits reduced, and so like I have buddies that that work at CCA, and we were talking about it beforehand, and they were kind of like, man, I don't know how this is gonna go. And we went to some of those public hearings, and the amount of like trout guides, like guys that fish for trout for a living, that stood up and were like, we want lower limits, we want 30-inch trout back. It was cool to see like those big trout here in Texas. Like everyone down here holds those things close to their heart and wants to protect them and wants to see them. And yeah, so it got renewed at 6 months, and then 6 months after that, it got put into basically made permanent. Yeah, so that was about 22, I think, when it got made permanent. And like I said, I don't know how much it's weird because it's part of like, I don't know how much I wasn't good at seeing trout 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and they were there, I just didn't see them, versus how much, you know, nowadays, because of the reduction, the limit reduction, and how well they've bounced back from that. And I know there's people that will probably be like, well, they were going to always bounce back, whether we reduce the limit or not. I think it's kind of a little bit of a little column A, little column B, all the pieces make the puzzle, right? But I mean, we've some of the big trout that I've seen in the last 6 months. Me and some close friends have been like, maybe we need to start trout fishing a little bit. But I think it speaks really, really volumes to you know, the guides up and down the Texas coast. You know, we want to see big trout, we want to see big redfish, you know. And it was just cool for me, it was just cool seeing all these old timers sit here and be like, man, I grew up catching, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 30 inches in a day, and I want to bring it back. So it looks like we're trying to.
Jeez, that's crazy. I mean, I know people who trout fish and they're still trying to, you know, they're on, you know, 2 or 3 30 yeah. inches in their lifetime.
Yeah.
Versus like that many. Kind of want to pivot here a little bit. So I have exclusively gone on a bay boat.
Okay.
Talk to us about skiffs a little bit. Cause you know, there's a few times, like, you know, we used to go out of Key Largo a few times, and getting across Aransas Bay is, it'll beat you up a little bit.
Yeah.
So just kind of, how do you navigate all of, you know, some testy waters in, around there in a skiff? Are you sticking to a coastal, or just kind of give us the breakdown?
I mean, the big thing, like, if, like, yeah, like, some, you know, flat skiff is a, anybody not familiar, it's an 18-foot boat. They're typically like 60 inches at the waterline. They'll have a deck that goes out to 80 at the widest. And so they're designed to float skinny. I run a Sabine Versatile, so it's a flat boat. So on top of all that, it's a flat bottom boat. One of my favorite questions with skiffs is, well, how wet does it get? It's like, it's an 18-foot boat. There's no such thing as a dry 18-foot boat. I don't care who makes it. Like, at the end of the day, it's an 18-foot boat. The big thing with running skiffs, and it's one of the cool things about Texas, is you really learn how to hide that boat. I mean, I've had that boat out, whether I should have been or not, and, you know, 30, 40 knots of wind. But, like, if you know the area and you know the water, like, you know how to hide that boat and keep it safe, you don't notice it. It's the same thing, like, fly fish. Like I was saying with fly fish, if you're going to fly fish the coast, you need to know how to deal with wind. If you're going to run a tiny boat on the Texas coast, mm-hmm. you better know how to deal with wind. But mm-hmm. the cool thing is, like, with those boats is, you know, I think, like, today I had three people on the boat, full load of fuel, cooler, everything. And, you know, we're floating in 5 inches of water. No problem.
Wow.
And then that boat can run. So it's a tunnel hull. A lot of guys down here run tunnel hull boats. I know they run tunnel hull bay boats, run tunnel hull skiffs. You don't have to, but you better know where you're going. That boat can... can run if it's wet. Can't run forever if it's wet, but it can run if the ground's wet. One of the things I will say to that real quick, though, is, like, just because it can doesn't mean it needs to. It's something that it's kind of scary seeing a lot of, you know, these bigger boats that can run skinnier and skinnier. And like for me, like, the boat's ability to do that is get out of jail card, right? Like, you know, whether it's I made a wrong turn or the weather kicked up on us or a client's having a medical issue and I got to get you home and I need to get there as fast as possible, right? It's not a, we're cruising around on a flat and 6 inches of water just because we can. But the cool thing, though, is, like, those boats then, on top of all that, like, so they're designed to be pulled. So, you know, somebody stands up on the back with a 22-foot graphite pole that pushes you around. Which I don't know, I love doing it. It's a great workout all day. My feet get tired, but it's still a great workout. And it's what I think is the coolest thing. Like, this is like the coolest thing for me, especially, like, when somebody converts and wants to go try it. And again, like, I had two guys today and we were throwing artificials off the boat, fishing just like we would a fly rod. The coolest thing, though, is, like, a lot of the areas we get to fish, like, you're not wade fishing into, you're not running a bay boat into. The only boats that are getting in there are airboats and poling skiffs. So we get to see, you get to see a lot of redfish being redfish, you know, just doing what they would be doing if nobody was watching them. And then on top of that, like, you know, watching a redfish, you know, decide that he's going to kill your fly or your lure and come racing across and destroy it, is, it never gets old, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever in any kind of fishing gotten sick of topwater blowups.
Right. Right. So this is like, yeah. Now, like, imagine topwater blowups, but it's not a topwater day and your lure's under the water and you still get to see that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's fly fishing. Not every
for
day.
Sure. For sure. Well, obviously, I know you do a lot of guiding, and this is my favorite thing to ask guides. What's just, like, the craziest, most insane, and you don't have to drop names or anything like that, but just, like, holy shit, this just happened. It can be good, bad. It can be people getting divorced. I mean, I had a guy tell me about, he had a queen bee land on his boat, and then the entire colony of bees was on his center console. And he had to drive it all the way back to Port Mansfield and get all of his, to just get a hose to spray him off or whatnot. But, you know, what's your craziest guiding story?
Oh my goodness. Man, I don't really, I'm trying to think. Craziest guiding story. I feel like compared to that, I don't have anything too crazy.
I mean, oh, come on. There's got to be like some best friends, you know, about to go throw blows or something like that.
Probably the only crazy one is I had an old guy one day that just looked at me. Just goes, Pete. Go, yeah, man. He goes, I got to take a shit. All right. How much time do we have? He's like, not a lot. I was like, okay. It's like, all right, give me, like, we spun up right there. He was like, I'm just going to go over these mangroves. Like, dude, you're not coming out of those mangroves if you go in. Like, so spun up right there, like, got him to some he's an older guy too, so got him to some, where he could get some solid footing. His son was with us, so his son, like, helped him out. His son's sitting there just like, I'm just laughing the whole time. But I mean, we caught a bunch of fish that day. So,
dude, this is perfect because this is my biggest fear. Biggest fear. I will not drink coffee in the morning just because I'm like, once it starts, it's not going to stop. And, I don't want to have to, like, it, you know, look over at someone and be like, all right, so we fish this spot out because I'm about to get in and start walking. So,
I just get up an extra hour early.
Yeah, see, I don't. I'm not a morning person. I'm a morning person by force. I mean, if I had it my way, I'd stay up till 2 a.m. every night and get up at like 8, 9 o'clock. But unfortunately, the world doesn't work that way. Well, let me ask you this. This is kind of my staple question here. Yeah. I ask everybody this. Well, there's a few I've forgotten, but I ask most people this. What is the best Tex-Mex place in Corpus?
It's outside Barbacoa.
Okay. That was definitive.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't even a moment of hesitation.
That's literally won awards. Okay. You go in there.
Well,
there's a bunch of awards. Yeah. So one of the things, like when I run a guide trip, like I bring it half day, I bring breakfast, full day, I bring breakfast and lunch. Right. And like my go-to Southside Barbacoa, like if you're coming fishing with me, you're going to get Southside Barbacoa.
Heck yeah.
And then, lunch, I make sandwiches. I got some clients.
Lunch, we're going back to Southside Barbacoa.
Yeah. Lunch, we're pulling the skiff and we're going back. unless you come with me on a Monday, because they're not open on Mondays. I got to go find one of my backup taco spots.
So were these the breakfast tacos you were telling me about?
Yeah.
Or like when you said, let's talk breakfast tacos at Southside Barbacoa.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What are the ones to get? Is it Barbacoa or is there something else?
Nope.
Okay.
It's funny, like they, you know, it's called Southside Barbacoa. So you're like, oh, I wonder if their barbacoa is any good. Yeah, it's good. When my wife and I moved to Corpus, while we were hanging out with our realtor looking for houses and stuff, somehow it came up that Corpus Christi is the breakfast taco capital of the world. And so we were immediately like, okay, well, if you're going to throw that kind of accolades around, like where are the best breakfast tacos? And she told us to go to Southside Barbacoa, and we went and we were like, man, this is amazing. We have since then, you know, that was 2019. So 6-7 years later, we have tried a lot of different taco places and we're still going back there. Every time we go someplace else, we're like, yeah, you know what? Just going to go back to Southside.
Fair enough. All right. Well, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but like,
yeah.
Let's give me a top three. You know, we got Southside Barbecue. You know, let's give the people some options here.
Yeah. If you're in Corpus, Southside Barbacoa, obviously. If you're in Port Aransas, San Juan's, right by the ferry. If you go out with me on a Monday, you're probably getting San Juan's. There is, I'm going to give you two more. There's a little town called Tivoli, Texas. It's in between Rockport, and if you drive from Rockport to Port O'Connor, you're going to go through
Tivoli. I've spent more time in Tivoli than okay. I would have liked.
Have you had the breakfast tacos from the gas station?
I haven't, because for some reason, somebody put it in my head that that's the best Dairy Queen in town or in the world. That Dairy Queen is terrible. Whatever you do, don't go to the Tivoli Dairy Queen. You're going to get stuck there for 40 minutes. They're going to get your order wrong. So I'm glad you said this, because we went, I guess it was May, and we just decided we're going to stop on our way out at the Tivoli Dairy Queen, and they got my ice cream wrong, they got my burger, awful, awful stuff. Just, I mean, a heinous experience. All right, so I'm glad you said this, because next time I will be getting tacos from the gas station in Tivoli.
Yeah, and there's only one gas station, so you don't have to. I don't know what it's called.
Just the gas station. I was going to say, if I offend anybody that listens to this from Tivoli, or if a happen chance works at the Tivoli Dairy Queen, good.
Good.
Pick your Dairy Queen, shut up your ass. Terrible.
My last taco spot is the Speedy Stop in Port O'Connor, Texas.
Okay.
Which,
that's the,
if you haven't been to the Speedy Stop in Port O'Connor, Texas, you haven't really been to Port O'Connor, Texas, and it's the cultural center of Port O'Connor.
Dude, that's how you know you're in a good town, when the gas station is what ties the entire town together.
Dude, and you know what? Like, since we're talking breakfast tacos, like, I'll tell you right now, like, Laredo Taco in a 7-Eleven.
Dude,
I'm sure you've seen those. It's not bad. It'll get you through the day. I've had worse out of like a taqueria.
For sure. I mean, and the thing is too, is, you know, there is, depending on where you go to get breakfast tacos, especially if it's not like a reputable place you've been recommended, there is like this, you know, a little bit of inhibition where you're like, am I going to regret this in 4 to 6 hours? If not sooner. I mean, we don't know what the health department is going on back there. We don't know if this is like back alley swirl. Like, all we see is dark meat.
The gas station in Tivoli is a prime example. I drove past that place for 3 years, and then one day I was at a boat ramp with a buddy, and he's eating this taco. I'm like, where did you get that from? That looks amazing. And he's like, oh, the gas station in Tivoli. And I'm like, no. He's like, yeah. I'm like, really? And you're okay? He's like, dude, this taco is amazing. I was like, all right. So went, stopped, got some, was like, yep. Not lying.
Dude, it's the recommendations. It's the most important part.
And then I think I put a post up, like a story post about it. And he was like, dude, you're going to blow up our taco spot. I was like, do you want it to be there? Do you want the taco spot to still be there?
It's a good point. There's you got to sell a lot of tacos to stay in business.
We don't need to give all the fishing spots away, but we need to give the taco spots we love away so they stay in business.
For sure. Absolutely. Well, Pete, I appreciate it. I don't want to keep you any longer on a Monday night. Is there anything, before we go, is there anyone else you want to like plug, shout out, any, you know, brand you're affiliated with, your own stuff, like plug away. This is an open forum here.
If you're listening to this and you're curious about, saltwater fly fishing, if you're curious about, fishing for redfish, I've got a YouTube channel, The Skiff Wanderer. I've been slowly piecing together a Redfish 101 series that covers, you know, it's got seasonal tips, it's got mistakes, it's got gear. We're starting to get more into the gear and leader and setup and stuff. I'm starting to build that portion of it out. If you have gear questions, you know, drop me a line, drop me an email, drop me a line on Instagram. Happy to sit there and talk fishing for way too long. Obviously, we were supposed to do 45 minutes and we're 60 minutes into this. And if you want to come out on a trip, like I said at the beginning, like the big thing is like practice. But like, I really recommend on, if you've never seen it, you just want to see it and you want like a casting lesson, like don't expect to put a redfish in the boat if you've never held a fly rod. But if you want to go see it, like, you know, we'll do a half day and you get at least get the chance to like see the world. And a lot of the stuff in the videos that I talk about will make a lot more sense. After that, if you need some coffee, I've got a coffee company called Real Fishing Roasters. Some of the best coffee, all small batch roasted to order coffee.
Oh, sign me up for that. I saw a thing that came out today. It said people who drink like up to 5 cups of coffee a day, like have like a 60% reduced chance of like heart disease and stroke. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to live forever.
There we go.
But yeah, cool. All right, folks, that is the Skiff Wanderer, Pete Capel. Pete, we appreciate it. If anything, I appreciate it. I don't know what the listeners did, but I got more knowledge out of this than probably anything else. So, looking forward to, you know, ruining my life here.
Good. You need another hobby.
Oh God. Here we go. All right, guys. We'll see you. Yeah. Only 8-hour drive. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.